Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm
fine. Much better than when we adjourned. When the parliament adjourned, I was actually in hospital. There's a lot of improvement in my health, and I hope that the work of this committee will not have too much strain on me and get me back in hospital. We welcome everybody who has been invited into this meeting. There are going to be a few changes. If we look on our agenda, we are supposed to consider and adopt the program of the third quarter of the committee. We will defer that to the end so that we deal with the matters involving people that would also need to catch flights and go back to where they operate from. We will also not have introductions. People will introduce themselves when they speak. It will help us in terms of time management. The purpose of this meeting is in twofold. We are going to be following up on the cases that we have dealt with. Let me not say cases, but let me say issues that we have dealt with. Issues that are related to specific companies. And the nature of those issues was that they were brought to our attention by small businesses who were complaining against big businesses. And when such were presented to us, we came up with a terminology that is used by this portfolio committee. We saw it as bullying and elbowing of small businesses by big businesses. That's not what was said by small businesses that when they came to us. It's us as a portfolio committee who actually came up with that terminology. And when the companies that came forward were mainly in the telecommunication industry as well as the construction industry. There's been cases brought to our attention by small businesses in the construction industry who are subcontracted by big businesses in the construction industry. And in the first meeting of the portfolio committee, let me also explain how these issues are brought to our attention. The entry point to the portfolio committee is the chairperson. So people will write letters to me, or they will phone me and ask to meet with me. I would then, if they write a letter, I would invite them to have a one-on-one meeting with me so that I can understand their situation, what is it that they are talking about. Or we will exchange those who choose maybe to write emails, and I then respond also in an email and explain the processes and also ask that person or that company to unpack for me to understand the issue, whether it requires to be attended to by a portfolio committee or it is a matter that requires me to alert the department and raise that matter with the department without having the portfolio committee having to sit down and talk about that issue. There are many people who would phone me, some would be asking about the services, or they would feel that a SEFA or SEDA or the department is neglecting them, and I don't bring those matters in front of the portfolio committee. I pick up the phone, phone the relevant person in the department, raise the issue, and follow up. But the reason for us to bring these matters in front of the portfolio committee is that we are a legislative arm of the state. And if there are issues that affect small businesses and there is no form of legislation and there is no protection and there is no structure that handles those issues, we discuss them at the portfolio committee level to get a sense as to whether there is a need to legislate or not. And in our first meeting, when these matters were brought up, there were different views amongst the members of the portfolio committee. Some were feeling that these were contractual matters between big companies and small companies, and the portfolio committee had nothing to do with that. I educated those who were thinking that way to actually say there is a new department established in 2014 to focus on the interests of small businesses. Small businesses are a constituency of the Department of Small Business. They are also a constituency of the Portfolio Committee on Small Business. And if the Portfolio Committee on Small Business is not going to allow itself to understand whether there are unfair contractual practices that are negatively impacting to small business, or there are ways in which small businesses are being treated, we would then not be understanding what our responsibility is, because legislation is put in place to correct and manage and set out the rules, norms, and standards at which unfair relationships can be corrected. And also it was done in the context of understanding that we, as this portfolio committee, have a responsibility to come up with laws, bills, to actually ensure that small businesses thrive in this country. I just want to make an example. When I was working in St. South, we would unpack clothes. There would be a box with the clothes and a box with the hangers. The clothes were imported, the hangers were manufactured in South Africa. I've had an audience with the people who were manufacturing hangers, plastic industry, who are saying government policies have killed us. They've allowed clothes to be imported already on hangers, meaning that factories that are manufacturing clothes in whichever country are also allowed to put those clothes in hangers, meaning that small businesses who are manufacturing hangers in those countries have now got an opportunity, because the buyers in the country are buying a dress, but they are not taking into consideration that if it comes already hemmed, jobs in South Africa of small businesses who would have manufactured the hangers are being killed. I'm just making an example. And then also the people who would be unpacking the hangers, the dresses, and hanging them on the clothes are then also retrenched because there is no more a need. to unpack the cloth and also look for a hanger the size of the cloth and then hang the cloth. So it's those issues that we then need to look at as this portfolio, because it's a new portfolio that has to protect existing small businesses and also open opportunities for small businesses to exist. See opportunities for small businesses to enter the market, mainly because the National Development Plan is very explicit in that. South Africa expects to create 11 million new jobs by 2030. 90% of those jobs are expected to come from small businesses, meaning that 9.9 million of those new jobs will come from small businesses. And only 1.1 million will come from big businesses. And that is because of the fourth industrial revolution. Big businesses will do work using technologies. And small businesses will create more jobs as opposed to big businesses. But that is also the trend world over. So if then the country has a challenge of high rate of poverty and high rate of unemployment, small business is then central in addressing those two problems of high rate of unemployment and high rate of poverty. Because if there are no jobs, then government people remain in poverty, and that government has to take care of those people through a social wage in terms of social grants, in terms of free houses, in terms of non-payment for services that are being rendered. And South Africa is not a welfare state. It's a developmental state, meaning that we have to shift the budget of government from being a consumptive budget and make it a productive budget. And for that to happen, there has to be a common understanding between big businesses and small businesses. As much as big businesses are more profit-driven, but big businesses also have got a responsibility to make sure that small businesses thrive. Non-payment of invoices within 30 days would mean nothing to big business because they can get overdrafts from the bank. Non-payment of an invoice within 30 days of a small business means that that small business will not be able to pay salaries, wages. That small business also will not be able to pay for electricity, for water, for everything. And that small business doesn't have an overdraft. Big businesses also have got a responsibility for enterprise development. Don't punish small businesses because they don't have the capacity. Train them because you get incentives for actually upskilling them. You get tax rebates for doing that. So instead of pushing aside an invoice and say it was wrongly calculated, call that a company, correct what is wrong, but also see a need to upscale and train them, because small businesses are usually started by people that are not trained in business management. It's people that have got ideas, it's people who want to employ themselves and have not had any opportunities, and also they sometimes do not understand even the technologies that are being developed by big businesses. It then becomes the responsibility of the business to transfer that skill. But you are not transferring that skill as a gift. You transfer that skill and government rebates you for skilling those people. If you spend 15,000 training people, you get a rebate of 80,000 from SARS. So you get more. You spend 15,000 in training one person, and you claim a rebate of 80,000. So government gives you 65,000 more than what was paid. So the issue of they don't have this, they don't have this, they don't have this is not an issue for us. So I want us to then approach this with two things in our mind. We took these cases and made them the case study so that in the process of the portfolio committee looking at the bills that can be processed by this committee, proposed by this committee and put in front of Parliament for Parliament to pass, we would have engaged with small businesses, would have had cases. That is what we said on the first day, that the companies that have come forward are actually assisting us on the process towards, we are working with them towards development of a bill to protect small businesses. Not one bill, maybe many bills that can come out of this committee as a result of the companies that came forward to report their dissatisfaction with the manner in which big businesses treat them. But also it gave us an opportunity to educate both small businesses and big businesses. There is a lot of learning that has taken place. And also to educate the committee. The committee has learned a lot from this engagement in relation to what takes place in the business environment. So the first briefing that we are going to be having is a briefing from CELC, Huawei, Telkom and Ericsson. The case studies that we are dealing with is Crema Solution. It is a Southern Holdings, it's Dishwire Technologies. And we also have a case study of Boniswa. Those are the four companies that we are going to be looking at, and then also have CELC, Huawei, Telkom, and Ericsson. I will then take the apologies from the committee secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and we are welcoming you back in Parliament. We know that you have been in your constituency areas. We from the administration's part, we have been here in Parliament as it is our home. And I'll also welcome and greet all the companies that are here. My name is King Unene, for those who have seen the letters, but they cannot put their face to the letter. Chairperson, I've got an apology from Honorable Tapa and Honorable Mwabe, both of them, they are attending an oversight portfolio committee on agriculture in Free State. And then I also have an apology from Honorable Bewa, who has started from the portfolio committee of tourism, then he is going to join us later. And also I have an apology of Advocate Bongo, who indicated that he'll like to, he's got another appointment, he'll leave at 12. And then we've got an apology from the Minister, Office of the Minister, Lindiwe Zulu, and the Office of the Deputy Minister. And also we received an apology from the Director General DG, who has sent Mr. Bajis to stand on his behalf. And then from the side of the companies that have been invited, we got an apology from Ms. Tandela Lavisa from Happy Hills. She indicated that they are in discussion with Vodacom, so they are finalizing that matter. So she is going to send a report to the chairperson on the outcome of their interaction. And then lastly, we've got an apology from CELC, where they have written to the chairperson stating the progress with the Boniswa, and they also indicated that the matter between them and Southtel, it's sub judice, so they will like to inform the committee after all those processes have taken place. But Southtel Holdings, it's here, then maybe we'll talk to it. So they've written this letter in response for that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mabasa.
Thank you very much, Colleague Chairperson. Good morning, and good morning to all our visitors. Well, I do propose that we accept the apologies, but I also want to comment that as a portfolio committee, we will want companies to note that we represent both the companies as well as the poor of the country. And if we follow the words of the chairperson that he started, it is the duty of big business as well as government to try to help small businesses to grow so that as a country we can be like other countries. Because other countries are successful because it's not only big business that occupy business space, but big business works hand in hand with small businesses. But the comment that I want to make is that when I hear the apology that says the company is taking a small business to court, the case is sub judice, I would like us to know that it's a warning statement. It's very easy in the context of bullying for a big, muscled person to bully a small school child, and in this instance I'm making a small business to be a small child, so that it's not something that big business should boast of, the capacity and ability to haul small businesses to court. Yes, you'll kill them in court because you have the muscle, you have the monies, you have the funds, you have the lawyers. So I'm making this comment so that we must keep that in mind. Don't compete with small businesses with your muscular abilities. I don't think they intend to compete with you. They expect you to complement them in their growth path. Thanks, Colleague Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mabasa, for making that that observation. It is a worrying factor when it comes from Celsi, who has been here, and during the constituency period, we worked on this matter. I had a meeting with the stakeholders manager from Celsi, and it was explained to him. He came to Peter Maritzburg to meet with me, as I had indicated in my opening remarks. He was made aware that the issue is not only the payment of Boniswa. That's not the issue. The issue is to go back to say, can you explain to us so that we can get an understanding as to why in the first place Boniswa could not invoice Celsi directly. Boniswa was told to invoice through rollers. And there is a difference in the amount that was paid to Brawlers and the original invoice from Boniswa. Can you explain to us what was the role of Brawlers in a transaction that only involves Celsi and Boniswa, because Boniswa did not have any contract with Brawlers. Boniswa was asked by Celsius to supply certain goods. And in the meetings that we have had, there's always been a missing party to explain this issue to us so that we get an understanding. Howie was absent because it was, Celsius had mentioned that they did that because of Howie, and Howie had not been part of the two meetings that were held. Howie is here today, Celsius is not here. And I want members of the Portfolio Committee to note that. Howie is here today, Celsi is not here today. But it has been clarified to Celsi why they need to be here. The same applied to Howie. Howie phoned me. We spent an hour on telephone. They wanted to understand exactly what the issues are. And they were phoning to apologize to say they are not going to come to the meeting because Boniswa has been paid. And I said, that's not the issue. Boniswa has been paid, but the issue is beyond just the payment of Boniswa. We want to understand how it comes into this and how Brawlers came into this. Because in this country there is rife corruption. And corruption in this country, as much as people may want to think that it's government that is corrupt, the business sector is very corrupt, is very involved in the corruption that is taking place in the country. So we want to understand what happened there, why there were two different figures on the invoice from Boniswa and the invoice from Brawlers. And also, Celsius came here and said they had no, they were not part of the problem because they had already paid that invoice through Brawlers. And we pointed out to them, that is why they ended up paying Boniswa. They would not have paid Boniswa if Boniswa had not come to Parliament. And it had taken them 15 months to resolve that matter until Boniswa had to come to Parliament. And even after Boniswa had been to Parliament, it takes several months. And the invoice of Boniswa was not paid with interest. It was a straightforward invoice, not taking into consideration that Boniswa would have used that money and generated more money. It was just paid as it was. 20-something months after it was supposed to be paid. So those are the issues that we wanted people to understand. It's not just, okay, I can pay you. But also the issue raised by Honorable Mabaso is a very important issue. Take me to court. That attitude is a very bad attitude because it says, we know that you will not afford. We have not paid you. We know that you will not afford as a small business. Time and money that you have to pop out to get the lawyers in order to deal with us. That is the bullying tactic that we are actually observing from big businesses to say, who are you? So, I'm happy, Honorable Mabaso, that you have raised that. We will have to write to Celsius again and express how we see them. The fact that they don't want to be part of resolving the issues and also dealing with the issues that we see in relation to existence of small businesses and the role that small businesses are expected to play in the creation of 9.9 new jobs by 2030. We will then come to to screamer. And Southel, and Ditchwire to actually take us through what their issues are. And then after that, Huawei, Telkom, and Ericsson will respond to those issues. And members of parliament will ask questions and make comments. Boniswa also will tell us how the matter was resolved and what the relationship is like now. So we will start with a screamer solution.
Good morning, Madam Chair and honorable members and my colleagues within the industry. Thanks very much for having us here today. There are a few things perhaps we could start with some of the positive direction that the larger corporate industry is in fact taking with respect to screening electronic services. I'd like to start there. So if we talk about some of the issues that we've had, we have been able to make good strides, and these strides are strides where there is more cooperation, there is more interaction, and there's more consideration of the expertise that our organization has that primarily deals with electronic repairs of telecommunications equipment. For those of you that do not know, it's important to explain what our company does and who our company is. We are a 62% black female-owned company. We are a level 2 triple BEE company. And we are in a very niche industry on the African continent in particular, with the repair of electronic equipment for all equipment, telecommunication equipment manufacturers, irrespective of whether it is Ericsson, whether it's Huawei, whether it's Cisco, Nokia, etc. So we repair that equipment. Now I think that, let us just start with this. There is no other company on the African continent that is independent, such as ours, and there is no other company on the African continent, such as ours, that has got ownership by a black female, and major ownership. 62% ownership. If that is not sufficient to open the eyes of the broader telecommunication industry to support our business and to make sure that it thrives, then I don't think there's any other boxes that you can possibly want to tick. That is not possible. I will definitely speak about some of the challenges that we have experienced and that we continue to experience. At one stage, our company had 2,500 employees. And up to 2,500 employees, we're down to just about 100 right now. 70% of our employee base are black South Africans. We had the honor to have a visit, and a visitor that came through and saw what our industry does. And the visitor, I'm sure, will say who she was that came to visit us and was very surprised to see that there are all of these black people that are there doing fine electronic repairs of PCBs and other inverters, rectifiers, etc., etc. Nobody else in South Africa does that, except for us. Now, the question that gets begged in this audience, what other box do we need to tick? And in many instances I get told that it's equality. But hello, if there is a quality issue, it was just mentioned just now, that there should be support to bring up the quality levels. We should not be in any way dismissed because there are quality issues. But have there been quality issues? We have been servicing Telkom for 20 years, 20 years, 3 years. We've been servicing Telkom. There are representatives from Telkom here. How many issues has Telkom had with our electronic repairs? If it's 0.001%, it's a lot. And that is an absolute fact. Now, why are we such a niche industry? It's very simple. There are certain pieces of equipment that is supported by the original equipment manufacturers, like my colleagues here in this room, and then it goes out of warranty. And then it's end of life, out of support. But it still works. It's like having a Mercedes-Benz that is a 1960 model, and you take it to a dealership and it says, I'm sorry, but we don't repair this car any longer. That is what our market does. Our market makes, our industry ensures that legacy equipment, out of warranty equipment, and any other equipment that is not supported by the OEMs, we retro-engineer this. We have engineers, black engineers, that retro-engineer this and puts it back into a working form, back into the industry. And it works. There's nothing wrong with it. It works. We have a one-year warranty that we give on all our electronic repairs that we conduct. Now, let me come to some of the challenges. We have mentioned this before, and then I'll give you the positive story. We have mentioned this before. In many, many contracts that are being written currently, inherent in the contract is a support from the original equipment manufacturers. And what then happens is that it cannot be segregated or separated so that they can look at the repair side of the equipment that can come to a South African black-owned company. So that's a difficulty that is presented through to us. In my candid opinion, it's not a difficulty. If there are two parties that are in fact contracted, only two parties, those two parties need to now revisit those particular contracts and stop this exclusion. I use the example very much of the motor industry. In the motor industry, if you look at some statistics, there's about we have about 10 million cars. 10 to 12 million cars that are on the road. And yet, in terms of our subscriber base, we have 87 million subscribers. One may think, yes, but that's twice our population. It is true. If this country can manufacture motor vehicles and export them, and a motor vehicle has got to fail safe on an ongoing basis because it carries lives in it. And these are people that have been trained, they've been given support, technological support and other support, and it happens in South Africa with an export capability. How difficult is it then? If our cell phone doesn't work because a tower has gone down, nobody dies. But if something goes wrong with the motor vehicle, somebody's going to die. How can we be so responsible and so articulate in making sure that we build and maintain motor vehicles that carry lives, and that we cannot be as articulate and skilled to repair telecommunications equipment? That is beyond belief that we cannot do that. It's completely beyond belief. So my appeal here is that with us having to engage with our stakeholders and colleagues here, we've had some support. Now, I'm drawing these analogies in this audience to really dismiss the ideology that there is no quality in this country, that we cannot manufacture things of quality, that we cannot repair things to the original standards. And that is an absolute myth. If it's done in the motor industry, the telecommunication industry is easier to do that, because there aren't that many moving parts in the telecommunications industry as there is in the motor industry. Undeniably so. So my appeal to all my colleagues here, engage more with Screamer Electronic Services so that we can then conduct the repairs for you at a fraction of the cost. And why do I say that? I say that specifically because of the logistics. And also the fact is that if it goes offshore, you pay in US dollars for those particular repairs. So it affects your forex of the country. And it does not support the local industry and does not upskill people. If we don't have economies of scale, how on earth is an industry such as ours going to survive? It is not possible for us to survive. We cannot have senior engineers and electronic engineers that are sitting at home and they are herding cattle. That's not what we're about. This is not what this country is about. Now, let me give you the good story. The good story is this, that very recently we have been engaging with two major OEMs that are in this room, one being Ericsson and the other one being Huawei. We've made progress with both companies, which I applaud both of them for, in terms of the progress that we've made with them. We are in discussions right now, and I must emphasize we are in discussions with them right now to look at starting the repairs of electronic equipment for both companies. I will report back to this forum, either via the chair or when we convene again, as to how far has that in fact progressed. Because let's not be under any illusion that this is going to happen overnight. We're not under any illusion about that. However, my appeal here in this forum with both parties, with both the major OEMs sitting here, is that we have to accelerate this process. We have been in engagement for a while right now. There are certain business reasons that it's been a little bit slow, but my appeal to them is please accelerate it so that we can grow our industry and we can sustain jobs and that we can ensure that we've got people that are upskilled. These are the two OEMs that, yes, they have now come to the party, which is very exciting for us and quite obviously for us to be able to now create more jobs. We've explained it to them. They've been to our premises, they've seen what we do, and they realize that we do have the skills to do this. My appeal here, Madam Chair, is to please get these two mega OEMs in the telecommunications industry to accelerate this process so that we can report more positive stories such as this in this forum. Because this is the forum that actually has brought this to light and brought all the parties together. So thank you very much for that. Then if we talk about the operators, I'll be done in 1 minute. If we talk about the operators, very exciting stuff with the operators, particularly three of the operators. Telkom, we've been with Telkom for 20 years. We support Telkom now for 20 years. We do the repairs for Telkom. So that's been very, very good. We have had engagements with Vodacom. Vodacom has visited our premises for all the different areas that we can provide services for. We've got positive engagements with them. I must repeat, engagements at this point in time. We haven't signed anything. But I think from a business-to-business perspective, the vibes are very, very positive. We've also had extensive engagements now with MTN, extremely positive, to the extent that we have been invited to a global RFP by MTN. So, once again, I want to thank all of you that have been supporting us, and I trust in you that you will continue to support us to not just sustain our business, but to grow our business so we can have people that are highly skilled that can get paid a high salary. Thank you very much.
We have allocated 1 hour 15 minutes for the first group, which includes Selfie Huawei, Telkom, Ericsson, Screamer Solutions, Southtel Holdings, ditch where technology is in Boneso. So ditch wire. So we would then restrict each company to at least 5 minutes presentation. Just go to the key points. But I would want members to make an observation here on the presentation that has been made. When Minister, the first Minister of Telecommunications, Minister Ivy Makasabura, launched this, she pushed thinking of when it breaks in South Africa, it should be repaired in South Africa. I just want members to keep that in the back of their minds as to what legislation would then need to be made. Is there a need to legislate to say when it breaks in South Africa, it should be repaired in South Africa? And just think of how many small businesses. We're not only talking about Screamer, we're talking about small business opportunities in the repair. Learning from the automobile industry where they are credit. I drove a Volvo. When it broke, I was told by Volvo where to take my Volvo to. Accredited the repair of a Volvo car. So let us move to the next presenter, Subtel Holdings.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, Chair, Chairperson, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Oscar Dube. I founded a company called Southel Holdings back in 2005. So I have been an entrepreneur for a long time. What we do, we specialize in deployment of fiber planning and basically actually end-to-end deployment. Currently doing lots of work for Telkom, Metro Ethernet, and you know, those type of services. My reason, obviously, for being here is obviously to take you on a quick summary journey. My issue is with Cell C. That has been actually ongoing for such a long time. This month, August, is a year. What we got purchase orders from Cell C for an ICASA project, which was the universal services obligation, where each operator has to deploy internet access to 1,500 schools, and Cell C gave us the first order in July 2016, which we executed, and there was no issue there. In 2017, in February, they basically we had a frame contract with Cell C. They did an addendum on that frame contract, and they issued us with two more orders. We obviously that equipment, we sourced the equipment, we brought it into the country, and we waited to be, you know, for us to be told where to when to start with the installation. And when the invoices became due, which was basically in August last year, we started pressing Cell C for payment to say, listen guys, the equipment is here. Can we at least actually get a, get circled for the hardware? And you can tell us actually when we can implement, we can deploy the services later, but actually at least pay for the equipment because we are holding the equipment. And that's when actually Cell C turned around and terminated our contract because I was being too pushy. The chief legal officer, Abraham, has not been friendly towards me at all. Terminated the contract and basically, you know, go and do what you need to do. And the only way was obviously arbitration, which we've tried over the last year. It's been a very expensive process until we obviously acknowledge that actually we cannot challenge like a big giant like Cell C. I can tell you that actually CLC only paid the arbitrator when this body became aware of the South Shore issue. That's when they actually paid the arbitrator. To date, as I sit here, CLC has not even put forward their statement of defense to the arbitrator. And the amount involved, we've got servers, 100. We've got laptops, Lenovo laptops, i5s, 300. We've got tablets, 2,400. All these things are sitting in storage. They've been sitting in storage for over a year. And we've been trying to collect from South Sea for that long. The amount involved is 13.794 million. So far, that amount has accumulated interest of 10.25%. So basically for the past year, we've gone over 1.4 million. And I understand why actually they didn't pitch up today. It's because actually to maybe hopefully this will go away, or I'm a nuisance, to be bringing such things to the attention of everyone. But as you can imagine, it's we were sort of like a growing company. We fell back to 7 people. We're now restarting again thanks to Telkom. The company is being rebuilt. Storage, insurance, bank costs, and these guys, they don't care. They just don't care. And there's nothing that we can do to them. They've got big lawyers. What are you going to do? It's CLC. And I can tell you, this operator, the only thing that actually maybe threatens them is if there's a threat to their license. Otherwise, CLC does not care. This is how they treat small businesses. The CEO, Jose, is aware of this. He's been copied on every email. He has not said a word. And it just tells you the character of people that you're dealing with. Thank you.
I'm sure members are also making note of what the issue is. Go and buy the equipment. We'll allocate the sites to you. You don't allocate the sites. And then when I push for payment for the equipment, because it is eating from my pocket on storage, we terminate the contract. Those are the main issues that we need to look at. Teach why?
Good morning, Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, and to all present here today. I'm Velosh Govender, and I'm the Director of DigiWire Technology. DigiWire Technology is a technology company that introduces advanced technology into the South African market, and we started doing this from 2010. And in 2010, I procured a system from North America to monitor all infrastructure, underground infrastructure, and realized at that point that our infrastructure was not developed to implement the system. So for us to understand what the infrastructure was all about, and underground infrastructure in particular, we decided to create a civils division where we can deploy, we can build and develop the infrastructure so we understand the infrastructure to apply the technology. And this is how we created the civils division. We've been in the telecom space building and developing, deploying fiber. We've done many sites for MTN. We were part of the City of Joburg's build from 2010. And we now registered contractors with the CIDB. So in 2015, we got audited and vetted on with Huawei Technologies. They took about 6 weeks to do an audit on us. We had to meet the ISO 9000 standard, which we qualified for. And from 2015 September, we started developing and building these sites for Telkom. via subcontracting to Huawei Technologies. And we've completed these sites, I would say, at the first week of May 2016. But we've had numerous and endless problems building these sites because, one, as we're building the sites, we've had numerous people being trained on our build sites. And when I say numerous people, we had a lot of Chinese people that was deployed on these sites, being trained on our build sites, as a result, damaging the infrastructure, and we had to constantly go back and replace and rebuild. So where we are in our situation is we've got outstanding payments, we've got an outstanding invoices, we enjoyed late payments. When I say late payments, from 3 months onwards, we would have a lot of variations that were dealt with between three weeks to 3 months. Our sites were completed in the first week in May, and our last payment, well, we still got an outstanding payment, but the next payment was made in August 2016. Now, in the process, I had to close down our civils operations because of the late payments and outstanding payments. But more importantly, we have outstanding work completion certificates, and we needed to have honored our CIDB grading or validate that and upgrade the CIDB grading, and we never had a chance to do that. So the issues that we have been facing is with Telkom, with Huawei, with the CIDB. I've addressed PIA with Huawei, I've addressed the PIA promotion of access to information with Telkom. Telkom has responded that I needed to have addressed them as a private body and they're not a public body. They've given that to me in writing. And Huawei has asked me, so basically what we're asking is, and from requesting the work completion certificates, especially from a Huawei. Huawei's head of procurement basically in writing, and everything I speak about I have in writing, had at that point had no knowledge of what a work completion certificate was all about. So I started explaining that to them. And then I started raising questions, how did you get awarded this contract? Because all construction contracts or tenders should be advertised on the CIDB website. I've been told that from the CIDB. So between the CIDB and Telkom and Huawei, I've been just pushed from pillar to post. So the CIDB says that in order for us to validate and upgrade our grading, we need your work completion certificates together with all the other necessary supporting documentation. But they need to see, in terms of reference, where's this tender, why it's not advertised on our website, and on your work completion certificate, there should be a tender number. So when I addressed PIA with Huawei, the information officer who is present here today has asked me to go to court because I've asked, can we have access to the tender? Tender, it should be in the public domain as far as I'm concerned, and you're dealing with a state-owned company. I've asked for the procurement policy around, and I've also asked around the policy around supporting the BBBE. But when we've also engaged two sets of lawyers, so it was endless cost that I had to endure with as well. In 2016, our lawyers met with Huawei, and we've got that in writing, and he's apparently no longer with Huawei, but basically they said they're under no obligation to promote the BBBE. So the list goes on. Right now where we are, we've got outstanding payments, we've got sign-offs on all seven sites that we built for Telkom. Outstanding work completion certificates from Huawei, and they're just giving us the boot around. So this is why I've addressed the committee to try and see if you can assist. And we need to move on. We need to close the chapter and move on. I've lost a lot. I've lost all my trained staff from 2010. When I started, I had 165 on my team. We worked very closely with the EPWP program in terms of empowering and, you know, offering the skills, the training, the skills into that program. I worked with the director of the city of Joburg, wanted to see reference on that, and we provided all of that information. But as we speak today, we've closed down our civils division, and that's because of late payment, non-payment, non-issuing of work completion certificates, and that's where we are. Thank you.
If we have a question on an input that has been made, should we note that and handle it during the session? Thank you.
Chair, members of the Parliament, colleagues and our clients that are here, thank you very much for the opportunity. Maybe also what I'd like to do is I think it will be very important that I think by a chance my mentor is here, so I'd like also to welcome him here. My name is Lynette Mahasa. I'm from Boniswa Corporate Solutions. Boniswa is a company that started in 2004 with only 7 employees. Currently, we're sitting with 160 employees. It's 100% woman-owned. We've got our own factory. We design and manufacture cabinets. So, and I'd like to thank this committee because, you know, I came here, I think, more than a year ago. We had a challenge as well with South Sea. Regarding payments, and through the committee we were able to receive our payment, but I think something that I'd like to comment on is that, you know, I feel very honored to be part of the case study that sits with the small portfolio committee. And, you know, through our involvement in that, looking at the cases, looking at what companies are going through, yes, it is true that most of the companies, the big corporates, they get their employees, their generation, they come from the small businesses. So small businesses, they suffer a lot. We also generate a lot of guys that are now sitting at corporates. Their experience comes from small businesses. And, you know, the biggest challenge that I hope as part of the case studies that we'll be looking at is the challenge of having a small company that can afford to have access to corporate lawyers. So having said that, I know that it's my plea that I wish one of the bills would be looking at the ombudsman for small and medium enterprise. I've been very fortunate enough to sit at United Nations, and every day we are advocating in UN to say that it is very important that the big players, the global players, should partner with the SMEs so that no one must die in that process. So I've observed that it's important for global players to survive, to make profits, but it's also important for the small players that as part of enterprise development, they walk the journey through for you know, as long as the contract is there, because that helps in the development of the economy. It also helps in the development of creating employment. The third part is that, yes, I've also been involved with companies like Huawei. But the biggest challenge is that, which I would like if the committee can look into, is the fact that, you know, if you partner with this small enterprise and you can chew them, throw them away, take someone else. By the time they leave you, you are at a worse negative position than where you are. Because most of the small companies, they can't afford, you know, you go to court and you can't afford court fees, let alone just having to wait for so many days whilst you are trying to defend your case. So it then leaves you and you get blacklisted, and then your employees, you retrench. It just leaves you at a worse situation than where you are even before you had a business. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we then move to Huawei, followed by Telkom, and then Ericsson?
Good morning, Madam Chair, and everybody convened here today. My name is Herman Kannenberg. I'm the head of the legal department at Huawei Technologies. And we are here today to address certain of the issues that have been raised and to also report back on progress that has been made with regards to these issues. I think first and foremost, I'd like to take the opportunity to apologize to the committee and to the members here for Huawei not attending all of the previous meetings. That apology is unreserved. I'm not going to go into any sort of reasons for that, but the fact of the matter is that Huawei has taken an internal decision to ensure that it partakes in the workings of this committee, as we are motivated to ensure that ultimately the objectives of the committee are introduced and are actually followed within the corporate sector and specifically within our company. Moving right along to the first issue that I'm going to address before I hand over to my colleague on the second issue would be the matter of DigiWire. Excuse me. We have taken note of the issues raised by DigiWire as well as the complaints that they have raised. In the last couple of months, we've had various internal discussions and a hard look at ourselves insofar as where we stand with this matter. And I think there are basically two issues that result in DigiWire's complaints at the moment, the one being work completion certificates and the other being payments. Insofar as the work completion certificates are concerned, without getting too technical, Huawei issues at the completion of every project a FAC, or a final acceptance certificate. My understanding from our implementation and project teams is that final acceptance certificates have been issued for those sites that have been completed. What we have come to understand in the interim, however, is that these certificates may not be adequate for DigiWire's purposes. We have received pro formas, which DigiWire have kindly produced and supplied to us insofar as setting out exactly what their requirements are. And we are now in the process of issuing these work completion certificates over and above our previous final acceptance certificates for all of the sites where a final acceptance certificate has already been issued. We hope to have this process finalized within the next week, and we hope to confirm this with DigiWire as well as with the chair as soon as that has been done, and if we do get invited back, we will gladly report back to the committee on the progress there, but we hope to have that issue finalized long before the next session. The second point that was raised and the second concern that DigiWire has is with regards to certain outstanding payments. I think it's important for the committee to understand that it's definitely not Huawei's practice to delay payments purposefully for any subversive reason. Many payments have been made to DigiWire. We, however, do have issues with certain outstanding payments and that we gladly accept. We have previously invited, and we again extend that invitation to DigiWire, that we would like to revisit all of these payment issues insofar for us to verify the work has been done. I know the committee does not want to hear about policies and procedures and acceptances, etc. But what we'd like to do is to make use of this opportunity to also impart knowledge on DigiWire to, so that they are in a position to better understand how our approval systems work. And we've actually indicated, and I'd like to reconfirm, that if it takes us 2 or 3 days of locking ourselves in a room and ticking every single box and ensuring that we verify the claims, we are more than willing to do that. And it's an open invitation. So those are the issues that I'd like to just respond to on the DigiWire. I'm going to hand over to my colleague from procurement who will just perhaps address the committee on the Beniswa issue. Thank you.
Hi, Arwan. I'm Rick from Hua. Hello, Arwan. Morning. I'm Rick from Hua Procurement Department. And I'm to be glad to hear to explain the Beniswa issues. I think at that time it's because we are the supplier for CRC, and we are supplying the equipment to CRC. And at that time also, we have to CRC the consolidate all the supplier amendment at that time. This is why CRC issued PO to Huawei and Huawei issued PO to different suppliers. Matter. This is the background for this issue actually. This is my clarification on this matter. Sorry? Didn't hear me? Okay, I mean, for Beniswa issue is at that time, we just explained the background for this matter. At that time, because Huawei is supplying all the equipment and service to CRC as a single vendor, and so at that time, Huawei is consulting all the supply management to all the subcontractor on the field, yeah. But then Huawei deal everything with CRC and then Huawei consolidate and to manage the different subcontractor on the field at that time. This is the background for this matter.
Madam Chair, I'll try and translate my best Chinese. just to clarify, we had as far as I understand from Rick, what he wanted to do today is to try and clarify the mechanics of the relationship and where Huawei is involved in the Beniswa issue. Some time ago, Huawei entered into a service provision agreement with Cell C. In terms of that agreement, Cell C consolidated the management of their subcontractors through Huawei. So instead of Cell C having to, on this specific project, dealing with 100 different subcontractors, they asked Huawei to take over that function. Part of that function in this specific situation was to take over a contract that Cell C had with a company called Brolaz. My understanding is that Brolaz then contracted with Beniswa, and this may have happened prior to Huawei taking over the contract. I'm not certain, I have to be honest about that. But after this contract was entered into, Brolaz went into liquidation, and I think that's where the payment issue resulted from a Beniswa perspective. They invoiced Brolaz. Brolaz was supposed to invoice through to Huawei and Cell C, and the payment was supposed to follow back down to Beniswa. The payment never made it to Beniswa, as far as I understand, and that's directly resulting from the Brolaz liquidation. Huawei did not have a direct appointment or contract with Beniswa, and the first time we became aware of this was when it was raised to the committee. I hope that clarifies the situation. If there are any specific questions in that regard, I will gladly try and answer them to the best of my ability.
How did that note could be checked? I just hope that when these small businesses interact with big businesses, poor communication does not occur like it happens today. And probably the small businesses will be blamed that they cannot express themselves. But of course, it's a light note.
Madam Chair, I will gladly make my translation services available.
Morning, Madam Chair and the committee. My name is Siyabonga Masangu. I'm here with Kamenita Dudley. We are from Telkom, and we would respond to some of the things raised. But before then, Madam Chair, we would like to reiterate Telkom's commitment to social upliftment and to the improvement of small businesses. To this extent, Madam Chair, Telkom has broadly three initiatives that it is currently running, that we, through these initiatives, we try to improve the cost of small businesses. We have, Madam Chair, provided the committee with printed copies of our slide deck, which the committee can go through in their spare time. But just to highlight some of the issues on slide 8, you will see some of the activities that are under a program that we call, I think it's on page 4 of your printed copies, where it's titled Future Makers Impact Highlights. So through this Future Makers program, up to date, we have established 24 internet cafes. We've established 3 hubs where we provide office workspace, technical back office, and business workshops to more than 800 tech companies, tech businesses. We have to date invested 381 million to support emerging businesses. This has translated to about 1,600 jobs and about 2,500 SMMEs. And I think from what we know is that they have accessed over now 200 million of our procurement spend. So, Madam Chair, we are trying very hard in that regard to build small businesses and to promote those in the ICT and tech space. The second issue that we have invested in, Madam Chair, the initiative is called We Think Code. We Think Code, you'll find on slide 20, which will be on page 10 of your printed pages. With We Think Code, Madam Chair, we admit students, we started with about 120 students from ages 17 to 35. You don't necessarily need a matric certificate, you need to just have the brain that is wired to code. So you go through a very robust admissions process which tests your coding skills, and once you have gone through that the admission process, then you are able to get the training very well classed. It's akin to one of the initiatives that Silicon Valley called, I think it's Program 42 or something like that. So, and then we also have SpliceWorks. With SpliceWorks, Madam Chair, we assist small companies to find suppliers through our technology platform. So they would then meet and mix and match each other on our platform at our cost, and then they would be able to then do businesses together. The last that we do to also make sure that we improve the skills that we desperately need for this Industry 4.0, Madam Chair, we have so far in the last financial year assisted 9,770 learners from disadvantaged groups with supplementary instructions. We have also trained 4,140 teachers on the use of ICTs in education. And so far, we've allocated 85 million to try and sort out some of these challenges. So in some way, Madam Chair, we are invested in this economy, and we would like to see small businesses succeeding, particularly in the tech space, where we see that most of the growth is going to come from. Madam Chair, on the issues relating to DigiWire and a presentation by Screamer, Madam Chair, I think the Screamer one, Madam Chair, is that it's somewhere where we are caught in between the rock and the hard place, because we are modernizing our network. As you would know, we're over 140 years company, and therefore we are in a very aggressive, robust process to modernize our network, both from the fixed and the mobile space. And right now, Madam Chair, we are really aggressively looking at wireless solutions. So it is a consequence of that modernization and migration that we probably have to think about how some of these matters could be resolved. But we do buy the point raised by the colleague from Screamer that there has to be a discussion with the original equipment manufacturers. We think that discussion needs to be heard, and we think that the BBBE and all other transformative legislation needs to apply equally to the original equipment manufacturer, because the nature of the contracting in this industry requires that they, at least they must come to the party. Similarly, the questions raised by DigiWire, we take comfort that Huawei is attending to those, and we will not be able to comment on them at this stage, Madam Chair. But we would be keen to facilitate any resolution where we can. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I now give an opportunity for members to ask questions instead of breaking. For tea at 11:15, we will break at 11:30. So members will have 20 minutes to ask questions. Okay, I've noted on our return. Honorable Chan, Honorable Menshwe, Honorable Mabasa, Honorable Bongo.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your attendance today and your presentations. I'd just like to start by referring to the comments the Chair made at the beginning of the meeting regarding the expectation that small businesses will create 90% of jobs for 2030. Unfortunately, that is proving to be a wildly over-optimistic prediction, as has been described in a number of reports that were recently released, amongst others by the Small Business Institute and the FinFine survey, which indicate, number one, that small and medium enterprises only contribute around about 30% of formal jobs in this country. That's way lower than the 50 to 60% that an economy of our developed status should be contributing, and that around 56% of jobs in this country, formal jobs, are created by less than 1,000 businesses, or employed by less than 1,000 businesses, including government. So we have an extraordinarily distorted economy, one which is not really in sync with other economies of our size around the world, and I don't want to go into all the legacy reasons for that, which we all know, but we have a situation where not enough businesses are being created in this country, not enough businesses are surviving, and not enough businesses are growing. Those are the real reasons why this economy is stuttering along and not growing at a decent rate. And if you look at the demographics of this country, where 80% of the population is black, that's the reason we don't have enough businesses, is because 80% of the population in this country have been disadvantaged for many, many years. They haven't had the wherewithal to start the businesses. They haven't had the capital, they haven't had the skills, they haven't had the networks, That's why we always hear about access to markets, access to finance, access to skills. Those are the problems that the previously disadvantaged in this country have faced and still face, which is something that this committee has addressed and is continuing to address as its principal mandate, to try and level the playing field for all potential entrepreneurs in this country and make it easier for them to get into the economy, so that we have an economy which is characterized by inclusion and not exclusion. Now, the problems that have been expressed to this committee today and in previous meetings also relate to an uneven playing field between big business and small business. And that is affected through, amongst other things, late payments of invoices, bullying over contractual relationships, a general neglect, whether it be disinterest or deliberate, of contractual relations between businesses that are meant to be collaborating, but in many cases are not. And so we have a problem in this country where, instead of businesses working collaboratively through the supply chain, which is what should be happening, we have this strange sort of situation where we don't mind if we muck up those relations, because we can always find somebody else to do business with. So we basically just dismiss a relationship in the hope that it's going to save us money, and we just go to somewhere else. And we say, if you've got a problem, sue us. Now the problem is businesses can't, small businesses can't, we heard from Beniswa and other businesses, they can't just sue you because they don't have the money, they don't have the time, they don't have the resource. And so there has been this situation where businesses are crying out for help, and that's why they've come to this committee, for the sort of help that they have not been able to get through other means, which includes the courts. So you've heard the reference made by the chairperson and also by Beniswa about the concept of an ombudsman, a small business ombudsman, which essentially is an alternative dispute resolution mechanism which exists in other sectors of the economy and which this committee will be deliberating on in the coming weeks as to whether it A, is a solution to the problem, and B, whether it's committee's view that it should be implemented. Now, my view is that we have to deal with both the causes and the symptoms of the problem. And the causes of the problem are not going to be solved by an ombudsman. But the ombudsman may well be a backstop and a reason why businesses will take a second think, will think twice about the bullying of their suppliers. But the key point is that there needs to be a more collaborative relationship between businesses of all shapes and sizes, rather than this sort of adversarial relationship that tends to be the case at the moment. And that's really what I think this committee is trying to achieve, is to bring the parties together. You can't solve problems if you don't sit around the table and face up to them. And also, this country, in a greater sense, is only going to thrive if we are able to build relationships across not just South African supply chains, but global supply chains, because an export-orientated economy is the only way in which this country is going to actually escape the poverty trap that it is rapidly facing. All countries around the world, for hundreds of years, ever since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, have based their growth on exports. So I urge the people sitting around this table to build those relationships so that they can focus on building the economy around collaborative relationships between small and big business. I think that it's welcome that businesses are here to share their concerns, and I think that this committee will be very interested to see these problems resolved at a structural level, as the chairperson referred to. Not just the payment of one supplier or the other, but fundamentally look at their method of doing business. Because that is really what is causing the problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is directed to Swima. The specialist once stated they had 2,500 employees, and now they're speaking 100. What are the major reasons, do you think, for such a drop in the number of employees, if it has to do with quality? As you said, they said your quality is inferior. Have you been able to compare your quality to your competitors? And what are you doing to improve your quality, if that is the main reason for the drop? The second one, to DigiWire. A statement was made that Huawei said they have no obligation to meet BE requirements. I want to find out whether that is true, because with all companies, it is expected that people that were disadvantaged obviously have to be uplifted, and that people have to also have opportunities of learning from big companies. And one of the ways to ensure that that happens is for BE requirements to be met. Now, Bonisa said bigger companies, they are losing competent staff, well-trained staff to bigger companies that are poaching their members. Now, obviously, one could appeal to bigger companies that rather than throttle smaller companies, small business, by taking their best, why not train your own, because you have the capacity to train? Is it a deliberate way of throttling and of killing small businesses by just targeting their best? If yes, are we being misled if we are told that they are training and helping to upskill smaller businesses? Why take their best so that they collapse? And the fourth one, for now, to all the big companies, is that we know in a country that the cell phone industry is dominated by foreign nationals. It is a fact, you go to all cities. Is that a drop in the ocean? If we talk about locals running and owning some cell phone companies, it's a very problem in the market. So now, being aware of this, I want to know whether any of these big companies is doing anything to help many unemployed youth who are interested in going this direction, that something is being done, that they please get some training, because coming from the apartheid past, opportunities were denied. So you now have a market that I'm sure between 80 to 90% is owned by foreign nationals, because our people have never been trained. Now that we are aware of this, is anything that one of the big companies, particularly telco, that are doing to try and ensure that our unemployed youth are trained so that they can also go into this market, because the interest is there?
Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the input that has been made. Some of my comments run across to everybody that made input, and some are specific. I want to know what the relationship is between the various companies here in relation to the Department of Higher Education, as well as in relation to the Department of Labor. You know, is there a continual communication, a relationship rather? And then number two, the schools up to grade 12, because schools are spread all over the country, and you would all acknowledge that the equipment that you produce eventually make a financial gain from people all over the country. Even the poorest of the poor are using cell phones. So what is the relationship of the companies with the schools that are located in very poor areas, rural areas? Do these companies make an input in assisting schools to produce the right products? When I say the right product, I mean the appropriate matriculants that will eat into your company, so that when they finish school, they fit it into your companies. Although that also does relate with my first question. And then, you know, the words that were uttered by the chair when she started, when it breaks in South Africa, it must be spared in South Africa. I would want all the participants in this meeting to comment on that, unless we're all agreeing, which is a good thing, if we all say, yes, we all agree, rates in South Africa must be repaired in South Africa. But we mustn't say it can't be repaired in South Africa because we don't have a certain equipment. It means the equipment must come into South Africa if the issue is a certain equipment. So, but I would want everyone that would make an input to comment on that statement, because I think it makes sense. If we don't build our own South Africa, who will do it for us? The accreditation to accredit repairers or the technicians of the small companies, who ideally should do that in the interest of both the big company and the small company, you know, because a certain rapport has to be struck there so that the left hand works with the right hand. And on the part of Cell C, it not paying on time, it, you know, if we're speaking of heaven here, I don't know if Cell C was going to go into heaven, but. But now that the but now on this, I would propose from the chair that we as a portfolio must have a meeting with CELC. But we will have to force them to have a meeting with us. You know, we will have to explore. Hey, because everybody that doesn't want to do something these days, they talk of lawyers. We have lawyers in Parliament. Kobe Bobo, that's your field. So, but we must, something other than I'm getting away here. Really, I mean, we can't have them bossing everybody around like this. And they make the input, their income from poor South Africans. Okay, including rich South Africans. But they don't, if a poor person goes to them, they don't say, no, you are poor, we see the way you are dressed, even if you have the money, it's all I know I take. No, no, they quickly grab the money and sign contracts with the poor, with the working class. There was a comment from, was it Ms. Govender or Mr. Govender? I didn't previous. Is it a Mr. or a Miss?
Mrs.
Oh, yeah, now I can see the beauty test. So, work completion certificates. The issue there, why is their company not assisted with work completion certificates? I assume that you submit the certificate to the company that you are working with.
No.
Or maybe let me ask the question, and then when the chair gives an opportunity, then you will then further clarify, because I couldn't. Then it means I may not be.
Can I clarify?
Oh, okay.
There are three parties. There is the company that has done the work, which requires the work completion certificate in order to be upgraded by CIBD. It's not a requirement from the company. It's a requirement to get to the next level. But then, for them to be upgraded, they need to get a work completion certificate. And Huawei was not giving them the work completion certificate. They were giving them something similar. So when they submit that to the body that has to upgrade them, it is not a recognized certificate. Which then means that the portfolio committee has got a responsibility also to facilitate a common understanding between the contractors that subcontract the small businesses and the bodies that have got a responsibility to upgrade their level.
Thanks, colleague chair. So if we can have more comments on this subject from, you know, the parties involved here. But then there was also a phrase that talked of damaged property. That's what I wanted to ask as the inputs were made. So I'm asking that question so that when comments are done, it's also responded to. And then there was a comment of the sites that were built for Telkom. The clarity I'm seeking here is whether Telkom has received those completions. I assume it's completed projects, if I'm assuming correctly. And if it has received them, if they have been delivered to Telkom, has Telkom paid, you know, in return? And then this issue that small businesses cannot necessarily afford lawyers unless the big businesses start to sponsor small businesses. Maybe we must resolve that. To say for every litigation, if a big business says, let's go to court, then there must be a sub-law there which Comrade Bogoman will draft that 90% of the cost shall be paid by the big muscles business person, and the poor little small business person pays 5%, you know, but we must start to think that way, but let's not take people to court. The ombudsman, you know, the proposal from Boniswa, I think we must consider it seriously as a portfolio committee when we resolve. And the relationship, I know it has been articulated, but if once more Huawei can articulate the structural relationship between itself and Cell C. I'm asking this question because if there is a concept of outsourcing there, outsourcing must not make the small business to suffer. You know, it's like you are just being sold to somebody else. When you say who, they say no, we sold you to person A. By the time you get to person A says no, I've now sold you to person C. And then the small business person must keep running around looking for who am I sold to now. So this subcontracting, this outsourcing, we will have to look at it carefully. I'm about to finish, Comrade Chair. Actually, I am, because it is my last comment. The employees, as technology progresses, I'm referring now especially to the big companies, do you have a program of upskilling your employees so that you avoid retrenching them? At least they already have the basics. Because if you don't upgrade them, we may find an easy way where companies say, no, we will recruit new ones. Where will we get them? We get them from small businesses. Will they be costly? No, they will be coming new. So instead of upgrading those that we have, the temptation could be to steal from the small businesses. And that will not be in the interest of the development of small businesses countrywide. That's a comment.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the presentations, and thanks, Chair, for the input that you gave earlier. And out of the input that you gave, my quick suggestion would be, we probably need a symposium wherein we'll not only limit this to the networks that we call this networks, but get much more larger audience of the big business to sell this idea. It was a very important idea for all bigger business, because you say in your opening that the NDP envisages that in 2030 we must have built over 11 million jobs. But if you were to take some of the presentation and the responses, you'll see that we're close towards multiplying our own efforts by zero in terms of that objective of the NDP. So we need to move in a speed of a mirage. So I suggest that if you call a symposium, call all big business. Let's discuss this. Let's make this presentation, because the possibility that they may have not even read the NDP, they may even not read the other strategic objectives of government. Like you raised the issue of if you train for 15,000, you get 65,000 more for that. If everyone was to use that opportunity, the objective of the NDP will really be met in 2030. And I agree with my colleague next to me. He says that 80% of the population is black people, and we need to address that matter. I think when others suggested that we get to what we call radical economic transformation, I think it was precisely to address that specific matter. Because radical economic transformation wants us to change the entire economic system, its management, the pattern, its control in favor of the majority of the people. But we'll not be able to do that as government or parliament without big business supporting this initiative, because we need big business as a partner, not as people that we call here to ask them questions on issues of payment per se, but at a strategic level, we need them to partner with government around these issues of making sure that Vision 2030 is realized. And the second, Chair, the issue of it breaks in South Africa, and it must be repaired here. It's a matter that I think we as the committee must elevate. We need to legislate around that. Maybe as we close the fifth parliament, our last legislation that we must begin to deal with is if it breaks in South Africa, it must be repaired in South Africa. I think that is another matter. Another matter would be, Honorable Mabasa, I think we need the, because even the, since towards the end of 1990, towards the end of, beginning of 2000, even the legal system itself and what they were teaching in the universities around law was alternative dispute resolution. So what I'm sensing today is like we don't want to resolve our disputes that way. But I'm suggesting that we may also have to look at the legislation to introduce an alternative dispute resolution between small business and big business. Also in line with the issue of upgrading when people have subcontracted, particularly on issues that deals with the CIPD. We may need a legislation or some policy so that we improve those kind of things. And I agree with you, Chair, that a developmental state, it also needs a responsible citizenry. So from the presentation, I could see that this bullying is actually it's much more at a higher scale than what we were thinking in this meeting. If anything in this meeting was to go by, the bullying is much more high elsewhere. Because in government, we had deliberately introduced that there must be payment of a service provider within 30 days. I think the same must happen to the private, because why we did that in government, it was bothering around corruption not to pay these people. We tell the invoice, if they don't promise you something, you just file it. Until the person gets so disparate that he comes to you and say, I'll give you 10% of your money, then you process it quicker. So issues of non-payment borders around corruption and issues that are not administratively sound. So we may need to look at that and get very close. There must be turnaround time also in the private sector. Mm-hmm. Which, because private sector is even more effective than government. I think 10 days must be turnaround time, because people who work with private business are people who have chosen not to look for job in government, or they could not get jobs in government. So they are trying their ends meet. So they need to be supported at all costs. And I think that as we go forward, we must not hide against this idea of the fourth industrial revolution, as though it is the first revolution that has ever happened. There were other revolutions before, and they came in. It's the fourth industrial revolution, much as we need to adapt to it, but let us not hide around it as if it is doing that is taking the jobs of the people. It is it that makes people not to do certain things. But I'm quite, there is a positive response from Telkom, which I appreciate generally, that there is a willingness to get into these matters. But what I'm sensing is not the level of engagement, roundtable engagement to resolve these matters. With the presentation that you made, I think it makes sense. But if you respond and say, we're going wireless, it means there were no engagement to say how to change to meet this model that we're in. And then I think those are the issues. We need to just come closer, much more closer to each other. So I think the symposium may be the first step what are saving to get everyone in the country, particularly the private business, to be in the same wavelength with what the country has set itself for, particularly the Vision 2030. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Kroger, followed by Honorable Temo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Niels.
My thing not working.
No, it's working.
I bet you're doing it.
Hello.
Jay, thank you. Allow me also to thank everybody that gave us a presentation, very informative. Jay, you know, bullying, big business, bullying small business is very close to my heart. And first of all, I want to congratulate Screamer Solution to stay so long afloat while everybody tried to sink you, you know, because it seems like this is they're out there just to sink you. My question about the 2,500 employees that went down to 214, where were the unions? I thought the unions will make a big noise about it, and as far as I can remember, I never heard any union say anything about it. So I'm a bit concerned. And Ma'am Chair, that shows also a sort of a disrespect to small business. You know, the unions just go after the big business, and they don't help small business in the same regard. I mean, it's a problem. And then also civil society. I think civil society, and some of my colleagues also mentioned it, that in the rural areas, people are paying their cell phone bills and cell phone, phones, with some of their last money, you know, because they're very poor. But because they must communicate, parents spend some of their last money, as I say, on cell phones. So I think it's also time for civil society to start knowing what is big business doing to small business like Screamer Solution. And let's stop using that cell phones. If there's a problem with Company X supplying the cell phone, let's make sure that the users stop using that cell phone. Because the minute we stop using the cell phone, we're also going to hurt the big companies. Because, and as far as I think I listened correctly, Screamer Solutions say that big electronic companies are willing to take South Africans' money to buy the phone, but they're not willing to give the job to South African companies to create that phone. Am I right?
Broadly,
more or less. So it's close to greed. I mean, I can only see greed in this, because it's double dipping. You know, they already make a fortune out of selling the phone. Now they still want to make a fortune out of preparing it. And remember, most of the, and we all know how cell phone works, most of the cell phone, when they break, it's because of the manufacturer, you know. But in any case, and I think government must definitely get involved and make sure that big business bullying small business is stopped. Because it's not a skill. Bullying somebody else is not a skill. It's an attitude. And we need to change that attitude. And how do you change your child, you know, as a parent, how did I change my children's attitude? You know, sometimes you need to be very harsh, you know. And that's what I'm saying. Government need to be harsh. You know, looking at licenses, looking on all those things, because somebody must start learning a lesson out of this and change. Big business need to change the attitude. We can't carry on like this, because there's a very good example of 2,500 job opportunities that's gone. Down the drain. I don't know what happened to the people. I don't know if we have record with those people. But you know, if you look at the families involved, you look at everything around that 2,500, closing to 2,500 people that lost their job. I mean, it's a huge impact
on civil society, on the economy, and, you know, most probably those big businesses will leave here today and say, yeah, let's work on this, but let's keep them for another month or two out of the loop, and most probably our problem will go away. Because that's how they operate. I mean, this big business operate like this, and I've got personal experience of that. Is they stretch this time, Chair, and then eventually the small business can't just keep their head up above water anymore, and that may sink. And then, guess what? The problem is gone. So, I think government and civil society, to close my point, Chair, is that civil society need to be much more diligent, I think that's the word, if my English is correct. Diligent, okay? Alright, but in any case, civil society needs to act, government needs to act, and we must get those that are guilty on bullying. I think South Africa must sort them out. Thank you, Jay. Vigilant, is that the word? Vigilant. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I have been covered. I was telling Honorable Bongo that, you know what, where I wanted to go to, you've already taken, but I think we are all sharing the same sentiments, Honorable Chair. There's this thing that when we advance, as Honorable Bongo, in terms of where we are as the fourth industrial revolution, then that is not a new revolution, and other revolutions will be coming. But as we advance, I think we must be really mindful of where are we as a country and our status, that we are a developing state in South Africa, and we need to be as only mindful and go hand in hand with like the small business. If the business is to advance in terms of the technology that is there, you know, they need to be considerate of the small business, that you cannot be killing really small business. I hear that, you know what, there's that amicable like relationship, you now understand each other, but when it started really, that wasn't there. It was like, you know what, we are at this time, and then as Telkom we must move on, you know, we don't care of whomever that is there, that we are working together, or you know what, but because this time compels us to be there, you know, and we must be there, you know, but going forward we need to be really thinking of those that we are working with, you know, and in terms of the country, what is it that we want to achieve as the country, the goals that we have set as the country, that we must work together, because if it's not only the government that will be producing these words, but working together, you know, having those partnerships as businesses. But I will also, Madam Chair, concur with Honorable Bongo's proposal of this symposium, because this is not an issue that will end here with, you know. We need to make these big businesses in other sectors. Like you have made an example of the textile industry when you were even construction. Yes. So we need to go to other sectors and have this exercise, because I think what we are experiencing this, we are experiencing here, it tells us about what is it that we are facing as a country. And I think also, Madam Chair, in the very near future, we'll have a good story about the Southern Holdings, you know, because they haven't been paid, they have resources that are still in the storeroom. So I think we must also make a follow-up to this South Holdings story, and it must be addressed in the manner that is expected. I think it should be.
There are a few follow-up questions from what has been said by members, but most of the inputs were actually comments that where members of the portfolio committee were identifying areas of legislation and what the committee can do in its power as a legislative arm. So I will then give an opportunity for response to questions that have been raised. So that we can then conclude on this lecture session.
Honourable Chair, begging your indulgence, I should have stressed one question at which I started, but I realize when they respond, they may not respond to me. Can I? Thanks. No, you know, when we spoke about that subcontracting and outsourcing, I would want especially the big companies to note that it does not end at killing small businesses, but it also kills community members. Because that chain, sometimes some of the equipment that are to be repaired are sent to a small company. And like those that Mountain spoke of, if those exact equipment goes to thousands and stored at the storeroom and not taken back to the original line, to the subscribers, then it means different subscribers are told different stories. Some of them will be told that your computer or your cell phone is still with repairs, while it is at that storeroom where there are thousands. And if it is a person, a private person, it's even worse, because that private person will keep on going to the store where, from which he bought, and he or she will be told the same story that it's not yet back. So I thought that impact must be noted, it does impact on ordinary people. And if we say small businesses can't afford lawyers, it's even worse with ordinary subscribers, with ordinary household people. There is no way they will take the giant Cell C to court. You know, they will just keep on. And as they go to Cell C, they pay the taxi fare, because Cell C may even say, it's not long enough to phone us, come. Then the poor person has to get into a taxi and go there and come back. So these are some of the frustrations that please, big business, save South Africa from these frustrations. Thanks, the committee.
Could we then get a response to that?
May I respond, Madam Chair? Madam Chair, do I have permission to respond to some of the questions? One of the questions was the demise of the number of people that worked for Screamer from 2,500 to 240. Primarily the reason for that is there have been technological changes, as we all very well know. And because of the technological changes that have taken place within the telecommunications industry, you'd find that the repairs, because of the change of technology, is bundled into contracts with the original equipment manufacturers. So you'll get an original equipment manufacturer, and what is being done and has been done, and hence the demise, is that the repair portion is also part of that contract. It is not as it used to be, where it was a separate contract altogether. Now, typically, and most of my colleagues here would know about managed service contracts and what managed service contracts really comprise of. It also comprises of the spare parts management and the repairs of specific types of equipment. This equipment that used to be repaired by us now does not get repaired in this country at all. that equipment, because it is contractually bundled into a global agreement, that equipment goes to the original equipment manufacturer's repairer, and not necessarily the person that manufactured the equipment. It could be subcontracted to somebody outside of South Africa. There are cases of that, which we know about because they are our competitors on the global market. So as a result of that, you'd find that when operators look at different contracts that are in place, they are contractually bound by the fact that in that contract it is including the spares and also the repairs. Where we then come in is when it's out of warranty. So in other words, while it's still in warranty, they say, no, Screamer, you cannot touch our stuff while it's in warranty, which is absolute nonsense. Because when it goes out of warranty, we then repair it, and it goes back into the network. And then you've also got, quite obviously, the situation where there's end of life. They call it in the industry end of life. So in other words, this equipment we don't manufacture any longer. Or end of support. We do not support this equipment any longer because we have the latest technology. Understandably so. However, that equipment still sits in telecommunications networks. Every single one of the operators sitting in this room have got legacy equipment, they've got out-of-warranty equipment, and they have equipment that is end-of-life, end-of-support. That is where they now use us. However, what we are doing currently is that we are engaging, as I said earlier on, with two of the major OEMs sitting in this room right now. There's no reason whatsoever as to why we cannot repair and also ensure that the warranties are carried. And I use the example of the multi-industry. The Mercedes-Benz warranty is carried simply because the technology and the skills, etc., are transferred into the local industry. If we're talking about localization and about industrialization of the telecommunications sector, this is one very, very big segment that needs to be addressed. So that is the primary reason. The contracts have changed significantly over the last 10 years from what they used to be to what they are right now. It was also mentioned here that there are many smaller businesses, SMMEs, because of the outsourcing models that there are within the industry, you find that the smaller companies that used to contract directly with the operators, they get bundled into a much, much larger contract. And in doing so, you find that you lose your identity. You lose your identity as an organization because you're now bundled into a much, much bigger contract. So that's primarily why. You also mentioned, sir, Honorable, sir, that is it because of the quality? My colleague sitting next to me here from Telkom, I don't know whether they have the statistics, but they'll attest to the fact that the rate of returns in terms of our repairs for equipment for the Telkom network is 0.001% over the 20 years that we have been servicing Telkom. That is a rate of, and Telkom, in terms of looking at the quality, because again, how are we certified in terms of our quality? We have ISO standards. So we are a certified ISO company, and also Telkom for that matter, they have got their own quality assurance program. They come to us every quarter to make sure that the quality that they want is in fact met. They come and test equipment on our benches. Huawei, in terms of their spare parts management, they have auditors that come directly from China, to come and audit how we manage all their spare parts. We manage all the spare parts for Huawei for the whole of South Africa, but we don't repair anything directly from Huawei. We repair it from the operators when it goes out of warranty or when it's end of life, or when they say, can you guys please fix this? However, we are now in discussions with Huawei to try to rectify that situation. So And we are also in discussions with Ericsson, where we want to rectify that situation. So, fortunately, we've taken the first step in the right direction. However, as I said, I appeal to everybody in this room that that process gets accelerated. Have I adequately answered all questions that were asked, or have I left anything else? Oh yes, sorry, I just want to make one more, if you don't mind, Madam Chair. I think that there are lots of players in the ICT industry broadly, and particularly in telecommunications, that do not understand IPAT at all. They don't know what it means. So I think if you speak about the symposium, that symposium is very important to unpack IPAP from the DTI. So it's clearly understood as what the roles and responsibilities are for the industrial localization programs. And I'm more than willing to assist to in fact do that. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think that we need to separate unresolved mental from resolved matters, and also to separate legislative requirements. On the unresolved matters, or semi-resolved, to us the issue of Bonisa was resolved it's semi-resolved because it only addressed the payment issue. It has not addressed the relationship issue. The relationship issue is that Bonisa is a supplier to Cell C. And if that is the case, Bonisa has the right to invoice Cell C. But then the relationship was not structured in that way. It was structured in that Bonisa does not invoice Cell C, but Bonisa invoices Roland. And there is also Howie in between. There are two versions in this story. The first presentation made by Cell C to us, which is recorded because we record our meetings, was that we as Cell C needed money and how we assisted us to get money. We looked for money in South Africa, we couldn't get it. We went to Howie assisted us to get money from a Bank of China. And because of that relationship, we also had to work with Howie and also work with Bola. And Howie then, in relation to the Bonisa invoice, told us that Bonisa should invoice Brawlers, and Brawlers then would invoice Fancy. That issue has not been explained as to why in a business that relates to two companies, you then find four companies. And then you arrive at a situation where an invoice that was supposed to be 800,000 when it hits Bonisa, it lands at Cell C with a markup of 400,000. That has not been explained to us. And that is where we are smelling the rat. We are smelling a corruption type of rat. Because there is no explanation of the role that was played by Brawler. And when we deal with this matter, Brawler is then liquidated, and Brawler, because it's under liquidation, can't come to Parliament.
That matter is not resolved. And we are sending a very clear message that Tawe, Fancy, and Monifa will still have to come back and explain to us that relationship. We don't want to find small businesses affected by what we read about in Eskom having to companies coming through other companies in order to get work from Eskom. We don't want to hear that in small businesses. So we are trying to cut that thing as early as possible. And we want to find out whether it is the right practice in the industry that is, there would be a middleman that cannot be explained. The role of that middleman cannot be explained. But that middleman walks away with 400,000. Very serious matter, because the president of this country has committed to fight corruption. And corruption is not only in government. Corruption is everywhere. We need to know what was the role of Rollup and why the invoice from Bonisa was less than the invoice that was submitted by Rollup. What work had been done by Rollup to qualify for a 400,000 markup? And if it is a 400,000 markup to Fancy, Fancy gets that money from us, the people who have contracts with Fancy. If Fancy is prepared to pay 400,000 more than what Bonisa has charged, Fancy knows what it's paying for, and Fancy gets that money from them. The subscriber. That's the bottom line, and we want to hear that. We are not saying it's like that, but at the moment, because there is no explanation to it, we see it that way. Until there is a clarity on that issue and we are satisfied with the explanation given to us. There are many areas that require legislation. Honorable Bongo is proposing a 10-day payment of small businesses by big businesses because there is efficiency there. And they will not legislate on their own. It's us who will legislate on that. Even the 30-day payment is not yet a legislation. 30-day payment by government and SOEs, this portfolio committee has got that responsibility to protect small businesses. The issue of an ombudsman. When we started this process, Ms. Makas, we were actually going that direction to say we can't sit as the portfolio committee and deal with this matter. But we needed 10 cases which were going to confirm to us that there is a need for this portfolio committee to check that route. And all the engagements that we have had are pointing us that direction, that there is a need for a body to exist. At this moment, we can't say it's an ombudsman. We will get the submissions, but we see the need for a body to exist to deal with this matter, and that body also had to deal with matters in a fashion, because we can't go the route of the court because the court takes longer. A matter that involves a big business and a small business can sit in 2 years down the line. By that time, the small business will have disappeared. The issue of outsourcing. You see, The cases that we have dealt with here on that, before Vodacom outsourced, yes, although it's still coming to Vodacom, but we are dealing with a matter that we have dealt with before. There were no problems with the contractor. As soon as there was an outsourcing of the project management of maintenance, then the problem started. And we then need to deal. We are not saying you don't have to outsource, but the challenge that we are looking at is you outsourcing to your equivalent. You are a network provider, a multinational. You are outsourcing to a manufacturer, multinational, Ericsson. The question then that we would ask is, where does your heart lie? Are you promoting the establishment of small businesses? Why are you not promoting one of the excellent contractors that you have had for many years, and then say, we are now outsourcing the management of maintenance and repair, and then we are building the middleman, and the middleman has to come from the bottom. Why is the middleman coming from the top? That is the question. Concerning the all members, see this thing of the need for looking at, if it breaks in South Africa, it must be repaired in South Africa. That is actually a legislation. But there is a member that has raised another important issue, that is, that industry is already saturated by foreign nationals. There are many electronic equipment repairers, mainly from Pakistan. And it again requires legislation from this committee to protect protect the repair and maintenance and make it a protected area for small businesses with quotas for South African and a quota for foreign nationals. It can't be a free-for-all. I can't go to China and open a repair shop. I can't go to Pakistan as a South African and repair. The street vendors have been pushed out by foreign nationals. Spaza shops pushed out by foreign nationals. Big companies like Pick and Pay have got spaza shops now. They are branding their name and moving into the area of small business. And this committee needs to legislate. The job of this committee is to legislate. The job of parliament is to legislate. Legislate to protect small businesses. Small businesses will not create 9.9 million new jobs without proper legislation. This committee must bite. And the way to bite is to legislate. I like this issue of saying, if a big company takes a small business to court, 90% of the cost must be paid by a big company. Yeah, yeah. That is legislation. Yeah, yeah. It will then create an environment where big businesses will see how difficult it is for small business to pay lawyers' fees. And that is what this committee should actually start to do. We must legislate, and we must legislate in a manner that makes the small business feel that there is a Department of Small Business and there is a Portfolio Committee of Small Business in this country. Honorable Temu, you raised an issue of the textile industry, although we have not had them here. Small businesses, people who are sewing uniforms, are complaining because the textile industry has just switched that, closed. They supply big businesses with the raw material. They know that small companies without raw material, they are dead. And the most important issue that is being raised by all members who have spoken is the relationship between small businesses and big business. As long as big businesses don't understand the importance of having small businesses and working in a collaborative manner with small businesses, the economy in this country will not grow. And when they attack high taxes, in order for government to look after the poor and unemployed, because there will be fewer companies who are making a lot of money, and then government will raise the taxes, they will pack their bags and go and look for countries where there is less tax, and the country, the economy of the country will collapse. So we must understand what is it that we need to do to keep the South African economy growing. I think that we can end in that there is an issue of South that also needs to be revisited because no one responded to that. But Skrema is raising a very, very important issue, the issue of warranty in the electronic industry. I'm going to make an example again of my world. It's manufactured in Sweden, repaired in South Africa, even if it is still under warranted. Service in South Africa, it's under warranty until it reaches certain kilometers. So why would it be not possible that this gadget can be repaired in South Africa when it's still under warranty? So Telkom and government departments that are dishing out work to the original equipment manufacturers must look at those contracts and separate the issue of repair and maintenance from the contract of supplying. You can still be a supplier, but separate those two, because by putting those two together, you're only looking at how you are going to be saving the cost, but your saving of cost impacts negatively on your objective of creating jobs and reducing poverty. So the symposium is one area that we need to go to. We will end in that note, on that note. Honorable Mabasa, yes?
I'm not sure whether I have not been following properly. You will correct me if I'm making a mistake. I thought you and I, particularly myself, we came in through following arms to clarify so that when responses are rendered to the meeting, they are more informed. So I took it that we are not yet through with the responses, that we still await some responses.
Yeah. Can we agree on this?
We are 1.5 hours behind time. Those who need to take tea can go out, and those who need to go and see Umfana, Ohlatshwe Inkomo, a boy that has been A boy that has been haunted by a bull can go and look at that boy and come back. Don't tell us how he is. Then we continue with the interaction. Can you agree on that? Even if it is a woman, you must go and see the boy. No, there's no time because you go as you wish to go and see the boy. Do you understand that where the boy is? It's that side. That side. The bull is that side. Okay. Responses. We will then give about 10 minutes to the responses, and we then get to the presentations that help us.
Okay.
There is a new suggestion to actually help people not to have cramps. But we do whatever we would want to do within 5 minutes, and then we're back at 1:30. There are people who would want to stand up and stretch, and those who would want to drink water, and those who would want to phone their wives if they are birthdays or anniversaries. All those things, nice things.
Gracias. Thank you.
Okay, we are resuming, and this session will take us through to 1:30. Happy Hills is not here, so we are going to be dealing with the issue around MILA trading and mobile control. I just want to recap on where we ended and where we are. In the last meeting held in 2017, where these companies were here, the committee resolved that there had to be a process which would involve these companies and the chairperson, a few members, those who would be available to assist the chairperson. In an attempt to resolve these matters, I engaged with Vodacom. I also engaged with Ericsson. I engaged with Miller, and I engaged with Mobile Diesel. I also engaged with Huawei during the constituency period, as well as Cell C. The first engagement of a meeting that took place in Pietermaritzburg, Ericsson had proposed that the discussions should only include Ericsson, Vodacom.
And I love you, you know. No, I thought, colleague chair, where we are now is to continue with getting the responses. Remember when you said we are giving only 10 minutes to so that from there we then get into the other item. So I suggest that we get outstanding responses, then from there we can then come where you are. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you for reminding me that. Can we get the responses then?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the response, basically after the six sites that we've completed for Huawei, or seven sites to be correct, we were not awarded any more projects going forward. And we had a meeting with Huawei's project director and procurement management, and the reason for terminating on this or not awarding any more contracts to DigiWire or projects to DigiWire was based on they did not want to manage 30 contractors, and it was easier for them to manage 5 contractors. So they asked me to subcontract for Saab Grintec. Now, I'm a level 1 woman-owned organization, and Saab Grintec is a very white organization, one, and two, they're not a construction company. So I declined on that, and as a result of that, there was no further projects allocated to us. Two, with regards to Herman's response on the PAC and the FAC regarding the work completion certificates, according to the master procurement agreement with Huawei, the PAC is the preliminary acceptance certificate, and the FAC is the final acceptance certificate that's based on their financial definition. So it's on a 90-10 scenario, and that has nothing to do with a work completion certificate. Telcom, it's now 25 months that we've completed these projects, and we're waiting for outstanding payments and work completion certificates. So I personally believe that you guys are being enriched at our expense.
How long was it?
25 months.
25 months?
Yes. Sorry?
Can you repeat what you said? 25 months is 2 years, 1 month. I want that on record.
Yes. Yes.
25 months is 2 years, 1 month.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. We started our site in September 2015. Sorry, I was just documenting some notes.
Maybe before you continue, I want members to make note of this, to say, if you owe Eskom or any company, you will see on your municipality, you will see on your invoice, if you have not paid for 1 month, there will be an item called interest. Maybe we should also consider, as members of this parliament, how to actually bite those who are not paying invoices within a specified time. If it's 24 months, on the after 30 days, the interest on that, on top of that invoice, should be added. On the following month, the interest on the balance, outstanding balance, which includes the interest of the previous month. And it should grow like that until the amount is paid. Because that is what happens to us as customers. If I have not paid my Eskom account, they charge interest, and then the next invoice comes with an interest. And if I don't pay, they add that interest again of the following month. So for small businesses, Boniso was paid the amount that Boniso originally invoiced. But Boniso was paid 24 months after issuing the invoice. And if Boniso had actually been adding interest on the invoice, interest on 30 days, interest on 60 days, interest on 90 days, the big companies would pay immediately to avoid paying interest on top of interest. And carry on. I just wanted members to note that 25 months, those invoices actually should take into consideration the interest. In the absence of legislation, maybe we can't do that, but we are a legislative arm.
Thank you, Chair. But what I'm basically saying or indicating is that in that time frame, we've lost a lot. So we want to be compensated for all the losses incurred. Damages to the build site, Honorable Mabasa, it's twofold. Whilst waiting for the PO, in terms of generating a variation on the PO, took between 6 weeks to 3 months. If we decided to put our tools down, the strategy that WAWI took was they would bring in a roving contractor, so, and it made it look like we abandoned the site. And Christina, I think you can, I'm not sure if you would be in a position to comment on this. With regards to hundreds and hundreds of Chinese people were deployed to many sites, not just our sites, and have been trained on our build sites. And if we put our tools down and complained about that, they would bring in their roving contractor and made it look as though we abandoned the site because they had a time frame to deliver the site. And there's something else we should take into consideration is that when you are a CIDB registered contractor, we are on a level 4, and we are hoping to get to a level 6 in terms of the services that we've rendered and the in terms of monetary value, in terms of what we built. The larger companies should also take into consideration that when you're engaging with a CIDB contractor, with a grading, and in our scenario, in our case, it's a level 4, so we and when we've invested on, and audited onto their books, so we were expecting to get projects to the value of $4 million because that's what the grading dictates. So, and as a result of not getting awarded any other contracts or projects to build, Huawei has not terminated the contract, so they're in breach in many areas of their contract. Because we've signed an MPA and a PPA with Huawei. That's a master procurement and a project procurement. So the project procurement was mainly for telecom. I just want to read something out to you, if you guys will be patient. It's not going to be more than 2 minutes. And this will basically give you an indication of what Mr. Mabasa was talking about in reference to his question. The first set of lawyers that we engaged with, and I'm just going to read a small clause, it says, our client has noted the response to the BE concerns and does not believe that Huawei is being entirely truthful. In light thereof, our client is requesting us to consider forwarding a complaint to the commission tasked with investigating contraventions of the BE Act and regulations. That's because of not awarding any further projects to us. And he says, in regard to this, we would appreciate you providing us with the following documents. A copy of the contract between Huawei and Telkom with particular reference to the BE obligations incorporated therein. A copy of Huawei CIDB grading. And the CIDB has also confirmed that Huawei is not a construction company and they are not registered as a CIDB contractors. So my question then again is how does a construction contract get awarded to a non-construction company? So the response from Huawei lawyers, which was Ross Ferreira at that point, says Black Economic Empowerment, which is a triple BEE of the agreement, does not provide any obligations on Huawei. Neither does it create an expectation for awarding of any further projects. And then in our very recent communication, we had a meeting again, I think for the fifth time, with Huawei, and this was not with Herman, it was with another lawyer, his name is Charles Udendal. Our second set of lawyers have written to them and basically said, this legislation, and this is directly alluding to the CIDB, we would like to point out that our client already provided your department with the necessary documents. I've done 17 PDFs for them to investigate and investigate ongoingly. I've also provided the documents to Telkom. Telkom intervened and have not done nothing about it. And all they basically want is more and more the same old information, and they're doing absolutely nothing about it. So I'm not even certain what Herman is talking about, having to sit over 2-3 days and go through item to item. Because we've lost out in 25 months. I've closed my civil division down, and I've lost all my teams. So the legislation governing the construction industry is the Construction Industry Development Board Act 38 of 2000, and regulations thereto. The regulations in particular deal with the requirement of work completion certificates, also referred to as practical completion certificates. Now, Charles Udendal is a legal advisor personnel at Huawei, and his response is, thank you for your email. Kindly note that your client attends to actual construction whereas Huawei does not. Huawei is therefore not obliged to be registered with the CIDB. It is on the basis that we are requesting that you state the provisions of the Act and or regulations or even the relevant contractual clauses. But as a construction company, you must know there what's the Act, what's the clauses, and what's the legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Any follow-up questions to Howard?
No, I'm still trying to go over the shock. Let's.
35 months.
I don't even know where to start. Let me pause, Chairperson.
It's not only that. They are also saying that on their side, Howard brought in Chinese people to be trained on how to do the job. Our understanding is that training is done for South Africans, not Chinese companies. The training is targeting our unemployed youth. And unemployment in South Africa is sitting at 27.6. It can't be that for work that is done in South Africa, you bring unskilled Chinese to be trained in South Africa when we have unemployed youth in South Africa. Can Howie explain that? But also, can Telkom, it's the same question that we asked to Vodacom. Telkom is a South African company. When you outsource and you contract, do you enforce or see to it that development policies of the country are not violated by your contractors? Because you are sitting here, you are the main client, and then Huawei is your contractor. Below Huawei is a small companies of South Africa, and you have the responsibility as the main client to ensure that the middleman that you bring in does not violate policies of the country, especially those that are trying to address the uneven levels of development that existed as a result of an apartheid government.
So what is the second question to Telkom?
My second question is directed to Telkom. My first question is directed to Howie.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Chi, and all the attendees. On behalf of Huawei, I'm Christina Naidu and I work for Huawei. On the 7th of November 2016, the amended ICT codes came into effect. And the industry requirement or the industry speculation was that all companies will drop by at least two levels because of the stringent requirement that was implemented. Prior to the implementation of the codes, Huawei was a level 3. After the implementation of the codes, we dropped only one level, a level 4. The reason why Huawei is very aggressive, but currently that was 2 years ago, we've gone back now up to a level 3, and we are 31% black female owned. Any tender that is issued by any of our customers has got very stringent BEE requirements. And in order for us to comply to that, we have to have policies, processes, and procedures to ensure that we can maintain our level as far as BEE is concerned. In addition to that, our customers put a lot of pressure on us to ensure that we maintain that standard or even improve that standard. And if we do not, there's financial penalties associated to that, which is huge values, and the possibility of losing your contract. So from that perspective, we take BEE extremely seriously within Huawei. If we look at what we do as far as equipment is concerned, so Huawei brings in the foreign equipment, and in order to deliver a solution to our customers, it's not just the foreign equipment that's required. There's local equipment that's required, as well as local services, in order to complete the full solution to our clients. We do not do any, all local purchases are done by local suppliers. All installations are done by local service providers. So we only bring in the foreign equipment, and all other work is outsourced to local subcontractors. How do we ensure that those subcontractors are fully skilled? Okay, prior to bringing them on board, we'd go through a thorough verification process. We determine exactly where the gaps are. The minute the contract is awarded, we take them through a very rigorous training program on all the products that they are going to install. We look at very stringent employee health and safety requirements in accordance to South African legislation, as well as our customer quality requirements. This training is provided to all our subcontractors prior to them starting. When they start doing work, on a weekly basis, there's checks that's been done to ensure that you are complying. The minute you are not complying, we will call you as a subcontractor in and say, these are the gaps that we are identifying as part of your development program. This is the training that we are providing to you to ensure that you are upskilled in order to deliver. So those are the interventions that we put in place. In addition to that, we do a quarterly supplier assessment to determine exactly whether the supplier is performing according to our requirements and the commitments that we have made to our customers. If there's a gap, that gap is once again addressed. We then do a gap analysis with regard to each of our subcontractors. What is preventing them from being the best that they can? Is it a matter with regard to a supplier not having the required equipment in order to deliver a better service? We look at how we can sponsor that subcontractor with the required equipment. We're even going as far as looking at what vehicles they are using in order to be more effective and efficient, and we sponsor them with that. The thing is, Huawei is not in this business for a short term. It's a long-term thing. Every investment and training that we provide to any of the subcontractors is time-consuming. So we would rather build them up to a point where they can perform instead of not supporting them through the process, because if they don't succeed, we don't succeed, and we start the process all over again. So those are the interventions that we put in place as far as our suppliers are concerned. When we talk about skills development, how do we transfer skills within the organization? First, yes, we look at the current level of technology that is required. If it's an advanced technology, we take the same employees and upskill them with regard to future technologies that we intend implementing within the organization. We look at graduates at all the universities. We're currently on the roadshow right now, and we go to all the universities, and we sell Huawei as a potential employee. And we take those graduates right from university, and we offer them a graduate program within the company for a 12-month period, where we give them the necessary experience in the working environment. We've got disabled learners in KZN and in Gauteng, where we give them also ICT training to enable them to find a job after the training program is completed. We've got an ICT a program with MIC CETA, where we take in 100 interns per year and develop those interns with the understanding that we would absorb at least 70% of those interns within the organization. In 2017, Huawei invested 1.4 billion in a Huawei campus in Woodmead in Johannesburg. That is just to show our commitment that we are not here for the short term, we are here for the long term. If there's anything that we need to comply with as far as legislation is concerned, we want to make sure we're 100% compliant as far as that is concerned. If we have to go further with regard to our device stores, so you would see if you go to the malls, there's now popping up Huawei stores. We call them experience stores. Those stores are not owned by Huawei. They're owned by individuals. We provide them with the training, all the assistance that they need in order to do the repairs for the cell phone, and we support them as far as that is concerned. We also intend opening up an innovation center at the Huawei campus. What's the purpose of this innovation center? Is to give people the opportunity to come and demonstrate their capabilities on the best technology that there is to find solutions for the problems that they have within their businesses, or students that want to develop new things like, you know, call me or things like that. So Huawei is truly committed to South Africa. Yes, we know that sometimes we don't always 100% do what we have to do as far as maybe the payment issue with regard to DigiWire, but I think we're committed to sit down and find a solution as far as that is concerned. Our intention is not to come to Parliament to be addressing issues of non-payment. If we come to Parliament, we want to know that we're making a better contribution. Where can we move to more progressively from where we are right now? And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the inputs that you have made. And I like the inputs. I like the inputs. But now,
I was saying I like the inputs. The challenge is whether the inputs versus reality go hand in hand. Noting those guiding inputs, where do they take you in terms of resolving the issues that have been raised today? because it's, as I said, it's one thing to have policies, strategies, and then the other direct question is noting that small businesses are not necessarily well resourced financially. When you undertake training to equip them to the level where the company wants them, do you assist in terms of funding them? You know, do you take that responsibility? Because if that responsibility is left with the small companies, SMMEs, it means that training is not going to happen, because first of all, they will be frustrated by big companies, not only in the communication area, even from other areas, who don't pay them on time, etc., etc. So you will find that they will not be able to prioritize training to upskill to the level to which Highway wants them. So that's the comment and my question, Comrade Chair. Thanks.
Chairperson, I want to read a sentence that was read before. Clause 22 of Black Economic Empowerment of the Agreement does not provide for any obligation on Harvey. Now, this obviously was stated by their legal counsel. At that time, it was Ross Ferreira. Now, I want to know how factual this is, whether this is misleading or what we are told today is misleading. One of the two, they don't go hand in hand. So I want to know which is the truth. And secondly, this Howie campus in Johannesburg, if I can have an idea of how many locals there are compared to the Chinese, because when we're told about Chinese who have been trained, nothing was mentioned about the locals. So what is the composition of the percentages of locals compared to the Chinese that have been trained at this headquarters, particularly because according to the legal counsel, you are not obliged to observe the BEB Act. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to clarify, is it Ms. Naidu? Yes, thank you. I think what you stated is very much what we would read in an annual report. It's something which sounds great, it's fantastic rhetoric, but the problem is that it doesn't square with what we hear on the ground from the people around this table. And in particular, Jijiwai in this particular instance, and that is the problem that this committee is trying to address, the uneven playing field and the fact that the rhetoric actually doesn't match reality on the ground. So I can assure you that this committee will be taking these matters forward. And that we are unanimous on this issue. And we will be finding ways in which these problems can be resolved at source. And the prospect of nothing being done because of a small business being treated unfairly isn't going to last forever. Now, we're not here to legislate for legislation's sake. We totally believe that legislation should be for a purpose. And any piece of legislation has to also take account of unintended consequences as much as it should the consequences that we intend, such as overburdened red tape. But in the case of this, for example, the ombudsman or whatever body is eventually implemented, this is something which a small business voluntarily will approach. There's no need for that person to go to the ombudsman or to the commission or whatever it's called, unless they believe it's a solution. So that's the first question, the first point. The second is a question related to your Chinese people that are being trained. I'd like to know what processes you went through to get visas for these people. Because we often hear from South African companies how difficult it is to get work visas for skilled employees that need to be brought into the country. And I'd like to know, did you experience those problems? If so, what were the ways in which you overcame those problems? How long did it take for those visas to be processed? And are you still experiencing problems if you have in the past? Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. As I'm listening to a good story by Huawei, then the question arises, as Mrs. Naiju, you were saying you are also skilling young people from institutions, assisting them and assisting companies to upgrade and what have you. But sometimes you hear stories that there are divisions sometimes within Huawei, whereby are closing down, not that and people are losing jobs at the very same time. And those services are transferred elsewhere, like sometimes to India, not that people cannot be working, but you find that people are being retrenched and you're taking those services outside South Africa, yet the way people were doing that work. Another thing, in terms of the 30% women that you spoke about, maybe Chairperson, through you, can we have that report? Who are these women and from which backgrounds? And yeah, those reports, I think we can be glad if we can have them. Thank you, Chair. Responses?
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I may just respond in brief to the sentence that's been quoted and that's been thrown around. I think it's important for the committee to understand that the sentence has been paraphrased, and that the whole letter and the whole paragraph needs to be read in context. And I'd like to ask your indulgence to just quickly work through it, because this is quite a serious allegation that seems to have been molded in terms of just taking part of a sentence and reading it. This paragraph was drafted by a legal counsel in my department in response to a letter received from DigiWire's attorneys. The specific paragraph in question starts off by saying, for the avoidance of doubt, the agreement as defined, which is the master purchase agreement and the project purpose agreement, project procurement agreement, provides for the following. And then the first sub is clause A, which is irrelevant to our discussions, but then the second one refers to clause 22, which is the black economic empowerment clause in our agreement with DigiWire. And what this states is that that clause does not provide for any obligation on Huawei, nor does it create an expectation of further employment. What's important, however, is that we understand what that specific clause says. And here's where I need to just beg your indulgence to just read the actual clause from the contract. Article 22, as it's named in this agreement, the heading is Black Economic Empowerment. Clause 22.1 states the following. The contractor, that's Huawei, reserves the right, and with a reasonable written or electronic notice, to request any additional information and to conduct standard BEE audits that it may deem necessary to verify the subcontractor, that's DigiWire's, status at any time during the subsistence of the agreement. That's the first sub-clause, and then there's one more, the second one. Contractor or Huawei has the right to terminate this subcontract in the event of any falsification in respect of the subcontractor's status as reflected in information provided in the bid documents. So all this clause does is it says that we have the right from time to time to evaluate our subcontractor's BEE status to ensure that that status complies to our requirements in order for us to then again comply to our customers' requirements. This clause further then says that we have the right to terminate the agreement should there be any falsification or issue, because unfortunately we have found in the past that not all information can be trusted at face value. This is not any allegation with regards to DigiWire, however. This is a standard clause that's in all of our subcontracts. So I think to read a clause from a letter creates somewhat of an incorrect understanding of what the intention of the parties was when they signed this agreement. It does not in any way or form state that Huawei has no BEE obligation. It just says that this clause places obligations on DigiWire to comply with BEE and that we can check it from time to time. That's it. And I think I have to refer here to what Christina said previously with regards to the BEE.
Go back
Thank you.
I can put this up on the screen if it would ease everybody. I don't know if it's possible. Madam Chair,
why is it our intention to listen to all the inputs that could enhance the quality of the meeting? But we also don't want to pretend that we have the litigation capabilities, so that we should not stray into that area. I would advise that a brief comment gets done, like it's already done, to say things must be seen in context. But I'm not sure as to the degree to which we must be taken into the contextualization, because once we go there, our legal skills will be challenged. And we are not a court of law, so in other words, I'm pleading to all the people that are here who are to make inputs, that bear that in mind, and it's a discussion. It can't be a legal court procedure. Thanks, Chair. But by this, I'm not saying that the gentleman must not make an appropriate comment, but he must make it noting what I am saying as a guideline. Thanks, Commissioner.
Are there any outstanding questions that have not been responded to? Telco?
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, the question that was first raised by Mr. Mabaso was on the collaboration between the operators and the Department of Education. I must say that there is a lot of collaboration, and there are interventions that have come from different operators. Speaking for Telkom, we have reevaluated our strategy of assisting schools with ICT labs on an ad hoc basis, and we found that they did not have as much an effect as we would have desired. In some of those, you find that the principals or the teachers responsible for the equipment have locked them in a strong room. They are well kept, but they are not delivering the efficiencies that we wish they would deliver to those schools, and they don't enhance the learning in the manner that we envisage, and therefore we then came up with a new strategy of a more holistic intervention. We adopted about 7 schools in the Eastern Cape and Gauteng. In Gauteng, we went to Winterveld, and with the help of the Department of Basic Education there, we then improved the infrastructure of the school, tidied it up, painted it, kitted it with up-to-date, world-class ICT infrastructure, trained the teachers on the use of the technology and the content that we're providing, which is approved by the Basic Education Department, and now we will be working with them in this journey to make sure that by the time everybody gets to matric and out, that at least we can see that they are IT-enabled and they're IT-savvy and there's an impact. And that if the teachers get it right, then half the problem is solved. So that's what we've been doing on the education side. On the procurement side, Chairperson, you know, we we're dancing on a fine line. But basically what I can confirm is that as we contract with the original equipment manufacturers, to as far as possible we adhere to the transformative legislation that applies in this country, not because we want to tick boxes, but because we believe in the efforts to have an inclusive economy. And with the relationships further down after the contracts have been concluded, I think that discussion needs to be had, because it looks like since last year, as we've been coming here, one is listening to different stories, but pointing to the difficulty between the OEMs and the subcontractors. I'm just not sure at the moment how that could be resolved, but it's an issue that requires attention, and I think it needs to be looked at. But I think also we must look at it with the due sensitivity that certain commercial agreements are in place. And what we also need to be aware of is that we buy equipment. Equipment, when you buy a vehicle, if one is to use that example which you used earlier, it comes with certain warranties, it comes with a model plan, it comes with with the risk of simplification, when you buy network equipment, you want assurance that if it breaks, they take it back, they give you a new one, if it's within the warranty period. And you want assurance that network equipment is in the state of repair that it should be according to the particular agreements that you've concluded. So that's those are just the things that we need to navigate, the nuances we need to navigate. But the broadly, the idea of an inclusive economy and an idea of working relationships between our contractors and their subcontractors, I think those are important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think that
the question on the visas haven't been asked.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, all the members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jackie, also presented by Huawei, and also presented by the Chinese. And just to mention about the Chinese people be trained on the site. Actually, my understanding and my concept is similar like your honorable to mention. Another question I want to raise, is it easy to get a South African visa? The answer is no. I just want to give an example how a Huawei employee can get a South African visa. Firstly, they must be very educated. I can promise that 100% of Huawei staff who bring to South Africa is benched above, and even we got a master and a doctor. Otherwise, you can't apply the job. The second one is that experience. If you just graduated, you can't come to South Africa. At least 3 years to 5 years experience. This is clearly be seen in the Immigration Act, and we must follow. And third one is the certificate. A lot of certificates need to be issued before you apply a visa, like a SAQA, like otherwise, and other things. And the fourth thing is the skill transfer. You must have a very comprehensive skill transfer. And then after you got the education, experience, documentation, then you can apply the visa. So I just present the background and then to let everyone to understand. Please be confident for our Immigration Act. They're very good to protect the local jobs. And for Huawei, we always keep that in mind, and we are taking very serious for identity issues and the PE issues. So for this kind of training on-site things, I never see that. That's my answer. Be prepared for that.
Chairperson, my question about the staff composition, as they are headquarters, I just want to be answered. That's the first one. And secondly, we need to be given a copy of the agreement that Huawei has with the GWIA. because in this clause 22, that was this email that was written by the legal counsel, it says black economic empowerment of the agreement does not provide for any obligation on how. So we need to know what is in that agreement that makes them say they're not obliged to obey and to comply.
Thank you.
Are you done with your responses?
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, Honorable, to raise the questions. The first one I want to answer is the of localization rate. Actually, our local people, over 60%, and then our Chinese people we bring in is only 40%. Yes, regarding to that documentation you mentioned, and actually we want to maybe have a copy of the content and then to have a further discussion in a little while.
I think I need to go back to the question I raised to Telkom. Mr. Matangu and the representative of Scream. I think you need to engage. The answer to the problem of the main client, the middleman, and the subcontractor. Main client, the contractor, and the subcontractor lies to the import that was made by the representative of Crema, Mr. Iso. In that, 10 years ago, there was a separation of the main contract and the warranty contract. Let's all just wear the interests of South Africa and all every day before we go to bed, think of how South Africa will create 9.9 new jobs through small businesses. If every CEO, CFO, and procurement manager in big companies would think of that before they go to bed, and when they are having shower in the morning, they are thinking about that, we would all be able to resolve the problem of the relationship between big businesses and small businesses. But if when we go to bed, we think of how much profit and how big my bonus check is going to be, even when we are having a shower, we are thinking of the bonus, then we will not resolve the issue of relationships between small companies and big companies. So the MDP, particularly this target of 9.9 new jobs by 2030 created by small businesses, should be like our Father who art in heaven. Because we all think of that every day. So we should then think of this 9.9 million new jobs. And the 27.6% unemployment in South Africa. And the 17 million people who survive on social grants. If we can think of those and make them our 10 commandments, then we'll have a developmental South Africa. But if we don't have the 10 commandments of the things that we need to address in order to create 9.9 million new jobs by 2030, that time will arrive and we shall not have been innovative and creative enough to see the things that we can do in our companies, also in our legislative arm, and in every corner of South Africa, which will take us that direction. So, Can we now move, Honorable Mabas, to the next? Okay. Large. Okay. Can we break for lunch? 30 minutes. Because we are dealing with AMA employees at 5. They will jump.
Thank you. I was invited.